is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is Prince, 1999.
Oh.
Okay, so... So yeah, 1999 by Prince, released in 1982, is one of the most iconic albums of the 1980s, blending funk, rock, pop, and new wave into a genre-defining masterpiece. The album is known for its innovative sound, with Prince experimenting with synthesizers, drum machines, and layered vocals. It tells stories of both hedonistic parties and deeper introspective themes, combining party anthems with existential questions. The album's title track, 1999, is an upbeat, funky anthem about celebrating life and living for the moment, while songs like Little Red Corvette delve into the complexities of love and relationships. The mix of sensuality and existential reflection throughout the album marks it as a defining moment in Prince's career, blending danceability with depth. 1999 not only became one of Prince's best-selling albums, but also helped solidify his status as one of the most innovative artists of his generation. With its infectious grooves and layered production, 1999 remains a groundbreaking achievement in both pop and funk music. So the album was released on October 27th, 1982. The genres are Minneapolis sound, funk, synth pop, R&B, dance, and new wave. And it was released on Warner Brothers and produced by Prince himself. And there are... So this is actually, it's a double album. So what we'll do... is what we'd like to do is usually split the album into side one and side two, but since it's a double album, we'll go disc one and disc two. It's sort of at the halfway point of whenever the halfway point of the album is, and we'll take a break at the halfway point and discuss. So the album begins with the title track 1999, and the first half ends with the album DMS or the song DMSR. And so if you're listening along, you can stop at that track and we'll discuss at the halfway point. And we have linked the album to the in the show notes to both Spotify and Apple Music, so you can get it on your preferred streaming service. And just want to remind you to check out our Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress. You get lots of cool stuff there. Like you can pick an album for us to review and get these episodes the day before they go live, as well as you get a shout out during these episodes, which is pretty cool. So definitely check that out if you're interested. All right, so here we go. Here is the first song in the title track, 1999. All right, and ending the first half of the album, first disc, with DMSR. Yeah, I'm finding this a little hit and miss.
Yeah, I'm kind of. It's a little bit odd. I love the funk elements. Some of the other elements are a little bit. I don't know. Maybe I'd appreciate it more with more listens. But it can be jarring sometimes.
I found, I love the opening. Like, I always liked the song 1999. That's a really cool song. And that last one, even though it was a little long, I liked the funkiness of that one too.
Yeah, it's pretty good actually.
But the song Delirious, I thought that kind of sounded like a video game soundtrack from like a Super Nintendo game.
A little bit. I mean, I kind of like the, again, the funk undertones of it was pretty cool. But yeah, that, I don't know, that synth that he was using in that one was a little jarring, I think. I think that's exactly the word I would use for it, for that. It was a little shrill, I think.
Yeah, it sat very much in the mid-range right there. There was not a lot of bass or not a lot of top end. It was very, like very pokey. Like, just, yeah, that. And that's a problem with a lot of 80s music that I find. It's when they get into this area of, like, of the synthesizers, it just kind of, and that, you know, that's where the humans hear the best. So anything that's in the mid range is just going to kind of poke through.
Yeah, it's
going to really be jarring. So I feel, you know, I kind of feel bad for saying this, 'cause I know that this is a very significant album in Prince's career, and this is a very highly regarded album. But yeah, I'm finding it very, like, there's like some elements that I think are great, like you said, like the funk, and there actually isn't any drummers on, like, there are no real drums on this album. It's all done with the Lin drum machine.
Okay.
So it is interesting that, like, 1999 and DMSR, even though it has that, the drum machine where it has a, like, a steady robotic pulse, the other instruments around it
fill it out really nicely.
Yeah, and make it more, give it more feel. Whereas, like, Delirious, it was all sort of, like, lined up perfectly. And it just had that sort of...
It did come off a little bit robotic, that song. Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I thought, like, when it first started up, I thought it was going to be pretty good. But yeah, then that synth came in and it kind of got me. And then, you know, I mean, it's the shortest song so far at 4 minutes. So it's, it just seemed to, being the shortest song, it still seemed a little long just because of the jarringness of the nature of it or something like that. It just kind of.
Yeah. And I don't know, like, Little Red Corvette, it also has that, but I don't know if it was a hit from the album, it's a song that I'm familiar with, that I'm more forgiving. And I think that's why your point was maybe, like, if you listen to these songs over, you start to appreciate them, because Little Red Corvette and Delirious have the same robotic sort of synthesizer elements, but I like Little Red Corvette, and maybe it's just because I've heard it a few times, like, out in the world. I don't know. I don't know if this is just, like, first listen, and it's, like, maybe not, like, hearing 1999 and sort of having those expectations of, well, the whole album is going to sound like that. And, yeah, like, the last song, DMSR, would fit in the album with that title track. But the other songs, like Delirious and Let's Pretend We're Married... And Let's Pretend We're Married is sort of in the middle. It's not quite as robotic, but it's not quite as funky as the other ones either.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it was... Yeah, that one was a little bit odd. I mean, the subject matter is odd. But yeah, it only gets stranger the longer you listen to it. But it's just... It's not quite as funky. It didn't quite hit me the same way. I just figured it was another sort of a throwaway, although it clocks in at 7 minutes and 21 seconds.
Which, by the way, what that song, I think that song is one of the songs. Do you remember in like 1985 or 6, they had the hearing of like music getting, the lyrics and the music was getting too
racy.
Too racy. And so I think that was one of the songs. I know there were a few Prince songs on there, but I think that might have been one of the songs that they mentioned.
I wouldn't be surprised. It's not the worst I've heard, but it definitely gets a little strange as you get on. It's just like, let's pretend we're married, whatever, and then I want to fuck you until you're whatever or something. It's just whatever. Okay.
The next album that he did after this was Purple Rain. I've heard quite a few songs from that. I think I've heard that whole album. And that album is more... Well, he's playing with a full band on that album. And so that album, I think, is maybe what I was more expecting with this one. Like that sound.
This one's a little more experimental.
Yeah, it is.
And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Yeah. To my ears, anyway. I know a lot of people love it. Like I said, there's good stuff on it. Like DMSR, I was actually really quite getting into that. Like the bass in that one sounds really deep and growly and nice, and I liked it quite a bit.
Yeah, and that one, I think, I could be wrong, but I think, like, there really is, like, all the instruments, like, that's all synthesizers. The bass, it wasn't a bass guitar, it was a bass, or like a synthesizer. So like it is interesting that you can achieve that feel, that funkiness without having like live instruments in a sense. And so at the time of the release, so this is the album that really broke Prince into the mainstream, and so 1999 was well received by contemporary critics. Reviewing for Rolling Stone in December 1982, Michael Hill praised Prince for working like a colorblind technician who studied both Devo and Afrika Bambaataa and the soul sonic force, keeping the songs constantly kinetic with an inventive series of shocks and surprises. You know, that certainly is true. I mean, this, even though there's it's not dull, that's for sure. There isn't dull moment so far.
No, I wouldn't call it dull at all. Like, it's the one thing that's definitely got going for it, you know, so far that I can tell, is it's definitely not boring. It keeps you interested, and each song sort of, you don't know what's coming next quite, you know, unless you've heard it before. But actually, I've not heard this album all the way through before. I've heard bits and pieces of it.
And that's one of the things that, it's certainly not predictable. Because I had my sort of preconceived notion of what
a Prince album is,
what his sound is. And I should have known better, to be honest, really, because he changed his sound so much throughout his career.
Yeah, he changed his sound pretty much every time he changed his hair.
Which was like every 10 days.
Every couple of years or so, something like that.
Yeah, it's it is definitely fascinating. I am interested to hear the rest of the album, though. And it isn't, like, I can see why they ended up being a double album, because some of the songs are very long here. I did manage to find a few interesting facts about the album. It says 1999 was Prince's fifth studio album, but it was the one that catapulted him into international stardom. It was his first album to break into the top 10 on the Billboard 200 and marked the beginning of his dominance in the 1980s pop landscape. I can I think 1999 was a huge hit, and it was a huge, I think it was a huge hit on MTV. MTV really sort of made Prince a big, big star. Little Red Corvette was one of the first hit songs to use the Linn LM1 drum machine prominently. Prince was one of the earliest artists to experiment heavily with the Linn LM1, giving 1999 a synthetic futuristic sound that would influence the direction of pop, R&B, and electronic music throughout the decade. And you know, if there's ever any 80s music that used a drum machine, it's either a Linn drum or an 808. Those are the two.
And most people prefer the 808 because it's a little more organic sounding, I think.
Maybe. I don't know if...
I know my dad, like, he rented a couple of other ones and just for his demos and stuff like that. And the one he said sounded awful to him, but he then got an 808, which I think he rented, just sounded better.
Yeah. I think the Linn drum was... I think it might have come out before the 808. And it was invented by a guy named Roger Linn. And I think, I could be wrong, but I think that's the one that that Jim Keltner recorded all the samples for. Like he recorded live drums for the samples for everything. I think he had Jim Keltner play the drums for it.
That's interesting. Which means the drummer should be... Jim Keltner should be the drummer on this album then.
Yeah, basically, yeah. This was interesting, and I thought this was kind of cool, and it kind of goes to Prince's like experimentation and everything. And it's sort of Jack White-ish. It's the album originally had no track breaks on the first vinyl pressing. The original U.S. vinyl release, side A and B were pressed without visible track separations, making it visually difficult to distinguish where one song ends and another began, an artistic choice that reflected Prince's unconventional approach.
Yeah, I can sort of see that. Like, he did record little tiny little snippets in between songs, I noticed.
Yeah, those were sort of the, those would transition one track to the other. So if you could hear the difference between the tracks, but if you looked at the record, it would be just one continuous thing of no silence. And it was one of the first double albums by a black solo artist to achieve massive commercial success. At a time when double albums were often reserved for rock artists, Prince's 1999 stood out. Its success helped break racial and genre boundaries in pop music. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, I guess I can't think of any other black artists that put out anything like that.
No, yeah, that's right, because Michael Jackson's Thriller...
Michael Jackson, as much as he could be somewhat experimental sometimes, but he was still very much, you know, in the pop world, more so than, say, Prince was. Prince had a lot more freedom to experiment, which I think allowed him a lot more freedom to say, I'm going to do a double album. Of course, he's the kind of person that you couldn't tell him not to do it if he wanted to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I was going to say, like, Thriller, the songs are a little bit longer, but there's only 7 songs on it. Like, it could have been a double album because they left a lot off. So it was sort of not common for black artists to put out double albums.
And it also came out 2 years after this one.
Actually, it was the same year.
Same year?
Yeah, 82, yeah.
82? Thriller? I thought Thriller was 84.
The single Thriller came out in 84. Okay. But the album itself came out in...
Why did the single take so long to come out?
I don't know, but I think... Well, they had a few singles before, like Billie Jean and Beat It were the first two singles, and then Thriller, and that, you know, the music video on that is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And this is kind of funny, and I don't know if this is actually true, but the title track predicted Y2K panic nearly two decades early. Though written in 1982, 1999 captured a party at the end of the world mood that oddly aligned with the anxiety and anticipation leading up to the actual year 1999 and the millennium bug Y2K concerns. It became a go-to anthem as that year approached.
I remember the song being on the radio again. I never took the Y2K thing seriously. I just didn't believe anything like that was going to happen.
Any prediction of the end of the world is...
Yeah.
Like, there was that, and then there was the 2012 thing with the Mayan calendar, and there was, like... Yeah, any doomsday thing, it's like, okay, whatever. So yeah, so those are some interesting facts I found about the album. But I guess we'll get back into the album. But before we do that, let's hear from our friends over at the Six Picks Music Club. So check that out.
Hey there, I'm Dave, and I host Six Picks Music Club with my two buddies, Jeffro and Russ. We talk about six songs on a playlist that meet a theme to a topic that we've already decided on.
Just real quick, do you meet themes? Do you meet them?
Okay, no, I don't know. I guess that... What's the...
Russ, could I get a ruling on the verbal phrase, meet the theme?
Jeff, I don't know. I'm not fluent in the spoken word.
People just don't say meet the theme. They say fit a theme. And every week we talk about six songs that fit a theme.
All right. Okay, fit a theme.
Guys, we're going to have to re-record this.
Ah, fuck my...
Okay, and Dave, don't forget, it's Six Picks Music Club, not your dark web pod, Sex Picks Booty Grub.
We'll now take a few seconds before we begin side two. Thank you. Here's side two.
Okay, and ending the album with International Lover. This is, I think the songs are good. I think they're well-written songs. I don't think
most of them.
Most of them, yeah. I don't know how I feel about this album.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I mean, there's a lot of things I do like about it, but, I don't know. The sex obsession is a little off-putting to me. It just is. Like, that's always been a thing with me. I don't know.
I get that. And, you know, I'm not a prude, but yeah, I get that. I get it. It can be a bit much. Sorry, you were going to say something else.
No, it's just, I find this album hit and miss for the most part. It's experimental. It's kind of fun. There's a lot of, you know, he's obviously doing things that haven't really been quite done this. Well, not done like he does them. So it's definitely very original, but, I can't say I've enjoyed everything on it.
One of the things that I think that I've noticed, I mean, yes, it's a double album, but I don't think it needs to be. I think you could have the same amount of songs and have it be a single album. Like, I think...
The songs are too long sometimes, like...
They're too long, and it's not just that they're too long. It's that there's, like, 3 minutes of a song that just kind of repeats itself, and it's just kind of like, okay, this... I can't remember which song it might have been, might actually have been Delirious, where I felt like, okay, this is a natural ending point for this song. And I'm looking at the scroll bar, and I'm like, there's like a minute and a half left. It's like, there's like half of a song here, and we've already reached the natural end point of the song.
Yeah, and it's the shortest song.
And it's the shortest song, yeah.
I kind of felt like that. a few songs in particular. Some songs, okay, they work all right if when you stretch them out. But other ones, yeah, it's just, especially with the, you know, sexual moaning and stuff like that, I don't need that. It's, the song would have been fine without it. And shorter.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing is, I want to like this.
Yeah.
Because I know Prince is a great artist, and I know that this is a highly regarded album, and I know, and maybe you're right, maybe it is one of those things where it takes multiple listens to sort of get that aha moment. It's like, oh, okay, I get it. I get what he's doing. And I feel like that might happen upon a few listens, but first reaction is I love the song 1999. I like Little Red Corvette, and I'm not sure if that's just because I've heard it, and that makes me wonder if, you know, sort of easing myself in, like, having heard that song a lot, maybe because I'm used to the song, that's why I like it, and maybe I just need to listen to this album again to see if I like it. So, like, that's my thinking is, like, I want to like this, so I'm leaning towards challenging myself to listen to again to see if either I like it, either it is like a sleeper, and you know, it's one of those things that kind of, like, third or fourth listen you get into it, or if it's just one of those things where everybody likes this thing, but it's not my thing. And it's, there are lots of movies like that. There's lots of music like that where it's like everybody raves about this thing and it's like, oh yeah, you got to check it out. And you hear it, it's like, it's okay, but it's not.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe I honestly don't know I don't know if it's worse because it was overhyped and I'm just like, my expectations were up here and I'm listening to it and it's like, okay. Or, and if I didn't have those expectations, what would my reaction be? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. This album wasn't overhyped to me, so, like, I know it's considered a classic album, but yeah, as far as you know, I remember the hit the second time around, yeah, for the most part, the album's just sort of hit and miss to me. It's got good elements to it and a lot of unnecessary elements to it. So,
yeah, no, honestly, yeah. Upon, like, first listen, that's my reaction as well.
And I try to be, like, you know, I like to accept things for as they are, but that being said, it's, you know,
sometimes you just don't connect with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, and like we always maintain on this podcast is all art is valid. You know, every artist is valid for doing their art, but it just sometimes your art is not going to connect with everybody, and that's okay. So having said that, what would be your three highlights on the album?
I might go with 1999 just cuz. And what else? DMSR was pretty good, and Automatic, I think, is what I'm going to go with.
Those are my choices as well. Yeah, I would have to go with those. Yeah, those were honestly good songs. There isn't a bad song on here. It's just, it could be cut down, you know. And that's one of the things that happens when you self-produce, is sometimes you can get carried away.
Yeah, you don't have somebody to rein in your ideas. Sometimes you need someone to sort of, I don't know if the word censor, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, to sort of streamline your idea.
Streamline your idea, yeah.
So I guess that brings us to the question is, would you listen to this again?
I'm not likely to put it on again, but I don't think... I think if somebody else wanted to put on... if someone else wanted to put on again, I wouldn't complain or anything like that. I think, oh yeah, I listened to this before. There's some good stuff on it. But would I seek it out? I don't know if I would.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm curious about listening to it again. And it, like I said, maybe there's something there that I'm missing on the first listen that, you know, I'm going to maybe take another pass at it. But my initial reaction, like some albums we've done, it's like, oh yeah, automatically, this is great. And then, but this one, it's like, and then other albums is like, oh yeah, definitely not. I don't want to hear that again. But this one is like, I don't know. I don't know. There might be something here. I'm just kind of on the fence. So
yeah.
I think I will listen to it again, but I don't know if I would listen to it again, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, so I guess that brings us to the end of the episode. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. Be sure to check out Polyphonic Press. You can get all these previous episodes and lots of updates and everything like that. And if this is your first time listening, be sure to follow the show and leave us a rating and a review, because it really helps new listeners find us. And yeah, check out the Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress. Lots of cool stuff there. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.